elected as governor of Colorado. At least I think it's the first time. Jared Polis, congratulations again. Thanks for being here, Jared. Appreciate it.
Thank you, and good morning, and hope everybody's staying safe out there.
Jared, yesterday you declared an emergency after this bomb cyclone storm. Just briefly, can you tell us what that emergency meant and anything else my listeners need to know in the aftermath of the storm?
Sure. The declaration allows us to activate National Guard and other resources. Rescuing stranded motorists was the first order of business yesterday. There were literally thousands, about 1,000 or more in the Colorado Springs area, many on Pena Boulevard. And, of course, large areas without power. So the work continues. The bad weather still exists in parts of the state. The Front Range looks a little bit better today, but we're certainly urging caution and people, at least in the morning hours, really only go out if they need to.
I think you made an announcement that the Capitol was going to be closed because of the weather. Do you know about today?
I was there till about 12:30 yesterday. We closed it up midday. State workers are on a late start today. That's also something that's the governor's call. So there is work today for state workers. We're expecting them to start at about 10. We'll see if that changes due to conditions in most offices, that the Denver metro area offices. And I'm heading into the Capitol today with a delayed start as well.
All right, very good. Thank you. Let's get to some interesting politics and policies. And I'd actually like to start with a listener question from yesterday that a listener sent me yesterday. Glenn, he grew up here in Colorado. He went to Lyons High School, served in the Marines, and now provides for his family by working in the energy industry. He asks what you meant, and in the context of this oil and gas bill, when you said you would do right by oil and gas workers, and how you plan to help the thousands of soon-to-be-displaced energy industry workers like him.
Well, I hope that our energy industry will certainly continue to expand and thrive. In fact, I think that this effort will hopefully save the energy industry from being banned or being severely restricted in our state like 112 would have done. We work closely with many of the worker groups, meaning some of the unions that work in the oil and gas space, certainly pipe fitters, electrical workers, were consulted in development of this bill. And I think there'll be a lot of, first of all, worker safety was one of the first and foremost. We've had a number of losses to oil and gas workers, I think, a dozen in the last two years or so. It's a high-risk job out on the fields. We hope to make it a little bit safer with some of the safety provisions of the bill.
So I think a lot of people, certainly among my listeners, Jared, think that this bill is much more anti-oil and gas and much more likely to lead to the loss of many thousands of jobs than 112 was. You seem to be arguing that this bill is less harmful to the industry.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, sometimes your listeners are in a little bit of a bizarre echo chamber there. But, I mean, let's just look at fact-based, Ross. I mean, I think a year from now, why don't you just say, well, how many people are working in the industry? Was Jared right? And it's as many or more, and there's good jobs being created, or is it less people? I think what determines that more than anything, Ross, is the price of oil and the price of natural gas. Those things are not in our control. But, I mean, that, you know, small changes in those affect things more than anything else. These changes essentially say we are going to fix some of these oil and gas wars by empowering local communities. And in communities like Weld County, we don't see any changes afoot. I've talked to their commissioners. I don't think they tend to use local control. It's opt-in local control, not mandatory local control. And many of the jurisdictions where a lot of oil and gas occurs, we don't expect, and it'll be up to them if they do, to use any of these local control measures to change locations on well sites.
Right, but the head of COGCC can, you know, flip a switch and basically turn off all permitting and also put a moratorium on any new permitting until all the rules are written, and that could take a really long time.
Well, there's not going to be a moratorium. There's no, you know, not, that's, you can be, people can claim that there is, but you're going to see permits continue to be approved. And again, I think if anybody's saying that this will somehow hurt jobs or hurt workers in the industry, why don't we talk a year from now and you can you can see whether those people will just eat crow and say, sorry, Jared, this was great for the state because I have my job and I'm doing great. Again, you know, the asterisk there is subject to oil and gas prices.
Okay, so I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. But will you eat crow in a year if it turns out that my listeners are right and a lot of jobs have been lost?
Well, they're not going to be unless the Weld County Commissioners start attacking oil and gas, or, you know, Greeley City Council attacks oil and gas, or Garfield County, the second biggest extraction county after Weld. So, I mean, it is local control, but, you know, from all indications are that the, you know, Weld County Commissioners and Garfield County Commissioners are very supportive of an important part of their economy. You know, I mean, the big issue was essentially you had a unelected Denver panel forcing decisions from Denver on local communities.
And well, you still do.
No, well, no. Now the siting piece is going to be in local hands.
Well, sort of. But right, the bill shows that people that whichever level of government has the most restrictive regulation will control, right? And also some communities can impact siting in other counties, which is also a problem, I think.
Well, look, I think that the level of government that is most effective is that closest to the people. The further you get from the people, when you go up, you know, from a municipality to a county, from a county to a state, to a state to federal, you kind of lose the immediate representation and concerns of the people. So I fully trust our county commissioners to implement this. I think that you'll have a much better outcome than if you have, you know, an unelected panel in Denver that forces extraction to occur in a different place than the locals want it.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. I'm also troubled by removing expertise from the commission and just putting on environmentalists. But, like, you know, let's revisit it, like you say, in a year, and then we'll see whether the truth is all on one side, all on the other side, or somewhere in the middle. All right. Let's move on to the next thing. As governor now, and putting aside, I want to talk about red flag. Putting aside to some degree here what you think of the policy, what does it say to you as the chief executive of the state when so many county commissioners and sheriffs are saying that they believe it's unconstitutional and if it's passed they won't enforce it?
Well, you know, our counties are units of state government, which I really love our counties. They are locally administered units of state government. There are some states where they have a lot more power at the state level and the state administers some of the programs that we administer at the county level. So I would say our counties are trusted partners. It doesn't mean that every county elects the person that I would want in each case, nor should they. But I love the county form of government, and I love devolving power from the state back to the counties in all areas, whether it's oil and gas or anything else.
But what does that mean about if this red flag passes and they say they won't enforce?
Right, then you get into the legal question. I mean, obviously, elected sheriffs don't choose the laws, right? I mean, they enforce the laws. I would think that there are laws that every sheriff has qualms with and wouldn't vote for if they were a legislator or wouldn't sign if they were governor. So I don't think it's different than any other law that a sheriff opposes, but obviously it's the constitutional responsibility of a sheriff to enforce the law equally and without prejudice.
But it's also, I don't want to put this in the form of a statement. Let me put it in the form of a question. You, as a governor, and before that as a congressman, and maybe even in some other stuff that you did before, took an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States. So do you think that public officials, broadly speaking, let's back away from red flag and sheriffs, do you think that public officials have an obligation to consider the constitutionality of something that comes in front of them, and if they deeply believe it to be unconstitutional, to say, I just won't be part of this?
Well, we have a very important third branch of government, Ross, and that's the courts, the judicial branch. The judicial branch definitively determines what's constitutional and what's not. Sometimes they put a stay on a law, and it's not enforced pending appeal. Sometimes the law is found unconstitutional. Sometimes laws are found constitutional. I mean, so we have a process to do that. I have faith in our democratic republic. I have faith in that process. And, of course, I will carry out the laws as are written, you know, subject to the judicial branch saying that they're constitutional or unconstitutional.
Oh, that's a very interesting answer. So are you saying that if a legislature sent you a bill that, putting aside whether you really liked it or really didn't like it, let's say you liked it at least a little bit, enough that you would probably at least go ahead and sign it, and you thought, you know, this is probably unconstitutional, would you sign it anyway, thinking that it's a court's job to determine whether it's unconstitutional, rather than your job?
So, you know, it's interesting. I do think it factors into the mind of legislators what might, you know, the extent of constitutional authority. And, you know, I remember this from my days at the federal side. One of my great colleagues, Justin Amash of Michigan, would often vote against many measures because he felt that they were unconstitutional. You know, I'm not an attorney. I, again, would take into account what legal scholars are saying. If I think that something is a recipe for, hey, this will probably be overturned and won't happen anyway, and it'll cost the state millions of dollars in appeals, I would be less inclined to sign it. I don't think that's the case with Red Flag Ross. I mean, it I don't know what it does in states. Many states have it. There have not been constitutional issues. There's been a lot of thought given from attorneys and others to respect, you know, constitutional rights and this kind of legislation. But, yeah, I mean, of course it would affect my judgment if I came to the conclusion that something was likely to be overturned anyway and was therefore symbolic. I would be less inclined to support it, absolutely.
For those of you just joining us, my very special guest, Governor Jared Polis. Jared, one of the things you campaigned on and, of course, are continuing to work on right now is full-day kindergarten. Can you please tell us why that's so important to you and how you think you can accomplish it without creating funding problems for other priorities?
Yeah, so that's obviously what I ran on as a top priority. Right now, across our state, there's a real patchwork of full-day kindergarten. In most places, parents have to pay, most school districts, $300, $400 a month. The state only funds half-day kindergarten. The reason that I believe in supporting full-day kindergarten is severalfold. One is the advantage to the child, first and foremost. Many long-term studies show the importance of full-day kindergarten to prepare children for success. To be clear, Ross, is optional, not mandatory. There's some parents who don't send their kids to preschool and kindergarten at all. That's fine if they're able to do that at home, but most families, that's not their reality. So to give every child a strong start, make sure that children from lower economic and disadvantaged backgrounds have every chance of success. Two, really what I ran on, and a number of the issues that I'm focused on are about how can we save Coloradans money, right? So how can we lower the income tax rate? How can we save people money on health care? How can we, save people money on kindergarten? I mean, there's so many parents of preschoolers who say, please get this done. I can't afford kindergarten. Or if I do, it means I can't afford a summer camp for my kid. I can't save for retirement. I can't save for college for my kid. So it puts money back in the hands of Colorado families rather than the government.
Are you tying in publicly funded preschool with full-day kindergarten, or are you taking those as separate issues?
They're separate, but they're related. And first of all, if you talk to, or maybe there's some listening, if you hear from any first grade teacher, they'll tell you there's an enormous difference for a kid for whom that's their first full day in school, first grade, and a kid who's had preschool and kindergarten. And it takes a couple months just to socialize in the classroom full day and really get the social skills and the academic preparation. What funding kindergarten does, Ross, is it frees up more funding for preschool. The reason being that since the state doesn't fund full-day kindergarten, many districts are grasping around to at least find ways to fund kindergarten for their very low-income families.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those pots of money that they use, or it's called eCare, their flexible preschool or kindergarten funding slots. So they're diverting them to backfill kindergarten to get a little bit more of it. If the state just says, hey, we're funding preschool, I mean, we're funding kindergarten just like first grade, just like second grade, it does free up a little bit more funding for preschool. But the two are not directly related. Preschool is provided not just by school districts, it's provided in communities, in quality providers. And while school districts are a part of that conversation, it's not something that's done exclusively through school districts.
All right, we've got just a few minutes left. Let's see what we can get through here. I've actually got a bunch of comments from listeners who use the same quote. They say, here's one, please ask Jared what happened to his inaugural slogan, Colorado for All. And what they mean and what I mean to ask you is, how do you feel about the speed and aggressiveness with which the Democrats in the legislature seem to be kind of pushing their agenda through in a way that feels, at least to me, like they are representing themselves and not the people of Colorado?
Well, I honestly, on the areas I ran on, I'd like them to work even faster. Obviously, saving people money on health care, free full-day kindergarten, not done yet. Not expecting them to be done yet. I mean, they're all bipartisan, and they're important, and they're moving along, sometimes a little slower than I'd like, but I'm confident we'll get to the end goal. We're working a lot on, you know, hopefully issues that affect the quality of life. Look, you have 100 legislators down there, Democrat or Republican. They each have, you know, the way it works here is each get five ideas of their own to introduce, right? Five bills. And so you see all sorts of ideas from all sorts of wonderful, diverse people from, you know, from rural conservative legislators to, you know, liberal urban legislators. You see it all. And, you know, what I hope it all comes together on is, you know, consistent with our theme, Colorado for All. We want a Colorado that works for a new immigrant. We want a Colorado that works for somebody who pays too much for health care in Western Colorado. Colorado that works for an oil and gas worker in Weld County. Colorado that works for a fourth generation farmer in Elbert County. I mean, we're all in this together, and we're only as good as what we could do together as a state.
But Jared, do you give any credence to the idea that if you think about some of these very large bills that are in the news, like red flag and paid family leave and national popular vote and oil and gas and the death penalty, that these are things that I think most of them would probably fail if they went to a vote of the people. Does it trouble you at all that this is kind of getting rammed through so fast in ways that probably a very large number of Coloradans are not happy with?
Well, I mean, it's what legislators do, and they're all accountable to ballot box. The entire state assembly is up next year, right? So I think that they're trying to solve problems they learned about in their communities, Republicans and Democrats, going door to door. And you know, Ross, that's the way those folks win those elections, right? It's a very small-scale enterprise. You win by putting in the legwork and going door to door, right? And candidates who talk to people, who listen to people, win. And so, you know, I have confidence that each of them are sort of carrying the voice of their constituency to Denver. And yeah, they're going to have different voices of constituencies, not even in a partisan way. I mean, a Democrat from Pueblo is going to have a different perspective than a Democrat from Denver, or a Democrat from Aspen, a Republican from the Western Slope is going to have a different perspective than a Douglas County Republican. It's just those are the constituents, and those are the folks that send them there. The state legislators are usually very close to their electorate. I mean, they really culturally, politically, socially really represent the people that send them there.
Okay, so let me see if I could give me like 15 seconds on each of my next two questions.
That's a quick one. Wow.
I know. Do you think that voters rather than the legislature should decide on the death penalty in Colorado?
Well, again, what I've said in that matter, while I have no problems with the death penalty, I would sign a bill that would end the death penalty in Colorado. I'd sign one that fixed the death penalty in Colorado. You know, there are real problems with it. It needs to be updated if we don't end it. So, you know, it'll be up to the legislature. And, yeah, one of those routes they could pursue is put it to the voters, or people themselves can gather signatures to put it to the voters. So we have many kind of checks and balances in the system. If people want something to be on the ballot, they can put it there.
But do you have a preference on this issue? Would you prefer that the voters handle it or the legislature?
Yeah, no. You know, my preference is we act. There, as you know, the current law requires executions with by name a drug that is no longer available that we can't buy. It allows for us to propose alternatives. But I can tell you, Ross, which we can do if they don't abolish the death penalty, that'll just tie it up in court for more years if we say this is the way we're going to execute. So we need a clear legislative way that we execute, or they can end the death penalty, or, as you said, the people can decide. But then it's a question of what is it we're putting before the people.
Right.
Are we putting before a fix it or an end it? The current law is very challenging. It leads to unlimited appeals that make it very difficult to administer. So
okay.
I hope that we see some changes.
And my last question for you, and I'm asking you this, in your role as governor, the official policy of the state of Colorado, so make sure you get this right. Sock, sock, shoe, shoe, or sock, shoe, sock, shoe?
Oh my gosh, Ross, I don't know. What do you think?
When you put your shoes on in the morning, do you put on both socks and then both shoes, or a sock and a shoe and then a sock and a shoe?
Does anybody do that second one? I do sock, sock, shoe, shoe. I put both my socks. Do some people put them on sock, shoe, sock, shoe?
Producer Shannon does, but at least if you do sock, sock, shoe, shoe,
that's
there's
the official declaration. We're saying, and that's right. And we're gonna, you know what? We're gonna trust our counties. We're gonna leave it up to local government, local control. They can decide who puts their socks and shoes on first in the morning.
There's hope for you yet, Jared Polis, governor of the state of Colorado. Thanks as always for your time. We'll talk again soon. Stay safe on the roads.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. We'll be right back.
This report is sponsored by Staples.